Galatians chapter 1, beginning at verse 8. Galatians chapter 1, beginning at verse 8. But though we are an angel from heaven, preach any other gospel unto you than that which we have preached unto you, let him be accursed. As we said before, so say I now again, if any man preach any other gospel unto you than that which you have received, let him be accursed. For do I now persuade men or God? Or do I seek to please men? For if I yet pleased men, I should not be the servant of Christ. But I certify unto you, brethren, that the gospel which was preached of me is not after man. For I neither received it of man, neither was I taught it, but by the revelation of Jesus Christ. The Galatians had not only had the true gospel preached to them, but they'd received it. They were scriptural churches. They had not been deluded. They had not received a flawed baptism. The gospel that they heard and received was the true gospel, and the baptism that they had received was true baptism, and their covenant together was a true covenant, and they were churches, or they were assemblies of the Lord Jesus Christ. But they were perverting the gospel. That is, they were accepting those men who were preaching a gospel that changed the gospel that they had received to a gospel that would not save, that would not comfort, that would not secure, that would not forgive. They were allowing men, Paul calls them some, ever how many that is, for there be some that trouble you. And they were changing the gospel that these men and women had received, had loved, accepted. They were changing it. The word pervert means to turn about, simply to change. And the change that was occurring in the churches of Galatia had to do with the Jewish element of the church, or segment of the church. And these people were saying, look, after you have been born again, after you have been immersed, and after you're part of the Lord's church, you can't turn your back on the things that Moses taught us. You still ought to participate in the holy days and the special days. You still ought to consider yourself a Jew, and you ought to give allegiance to the Jewish traditions. We ought not forsake these wonderful things that our forefathers and our ancestors have taught us. So they were leading people who had been free from all the bondage of the Judaic system. They were leading them back under the law, and they were teaching them to observe parts of the law. And in so doing, they were changing the gospel, that is, the message of God. They were causing a message that had in it the message of God's kingdom, the message of salvation, the message of Christ coming, all of these glad things. They were being changed. They were making it a law-dominated form of preaching. You see this particularly in the book of Acts, in the 21st chapter. Whenever Paul came to Jerusalem to visit in the city of Jerusalem, just before he was taken to Rome and then put to death, in Acts chapter 21 and verse 17, there is this account of his visit at Jerusalem. And when we were come to Jerusalem, this is Luke writing, the brethren received us gladly, and the day following, Paul went in with us unto James, and all the elders were present. And when we had saluted them, we declared particularly what things God had wrought among the Gentiles by his ministry. And when they heard it, they glorified the Lord and said unto him, Thou seest, brother, how many thousands of Jews there are which believe. And there were thousands of believing, converted, baptized Jews in Jerusalem. Now notice, and they are all zealous of the law. That is, not only are they believers, but they have not left the old ways. They are still zealous of the law. And they are informed of thee that thou teachest all the Jews which are among the Gentiles to forsake Moses, saying that they ought not to be circumcised, that they ought not to circumcise their children, neither to walk after their are the customs. So what did James tell Paul? He said, well, you've had success among the Gentiles. We've had success among the Jews, and not any of the Jews that we have preached to and taught have forsaken the law. They're still faithful to it. But we understand that when you preach and teach to the Jews that hear you, you tell them there's no need for them to circumcise their children, and you tell them there's no need for them to follow the custom of the fathers. And that's exactly what Paul was doing, and Paul should have done that because that's what God wanted him to do. The Bible tells us that Paul was amazed by how quickly this perverted teaching had spread. It had spread rapidly. Paul said, I marvel that you're so soon removed. And that term soon removed means how quickly you have changed and how quickly it has spread from church to church and who its carriers were. You know, disease has carriers. And when men would change the church of the living God, there are always those who are carriers of that change. I hear occasionally a man make a particular statement. And if he happens to be a popular person, it won't be long until that statement will be made in another pulpit, and then it'll be made in another pulpit, and before long it's sort of something that all the churches are saying and repeating. Perverted truth, or truth that's changed into an untruth, or a thing that's not like what it should be. It's not a miracle that it happens. It's not done by devils, not done by angels. The perversion of God's truth is done by men. The carriers of this disease are people. Now, Paul sternly condemns this error. For though we are an angel from heaven, Paul states, now even though it were me myself, are a messenger from the heavenly realms. He's not talking about an angelic being preaching the gospel. The word angel means messenger. So what he's saying, even if I come to you, he's writing them a letter now, even if I come to you, or any other person comes and claim to have authority from heaven for the message that they are preaching, and if that messenger comes and preaches any other message unto you than that which we have preached unto you. If anyone comes and proclaims any message other than the message that we have proclaimed, let him be accursed. And I suppose that Paul had his membership in the ministerial alliance canceled after that statement. Because modern day religion, in fact, I'm amazed that even some who wear the name of Baptist, of how they would have been willing to work out some sort of balance between the Judaizers and the gospel that Paul preached, so there would not have been a tearing up and a rooting out of things and people and circumstances. But Paul said, let that person be accursed, and that's probably the strongest word that he could have used. It means that which has been dedicated to destruction and for which there's absolutely no offering of redemption. Paul isn't saying, let these people be accused so that they can change their minds. But Paul is saying, there is no hope for these people. They're not going to change, so let these people be destroyed. And you wonder why Paul didn't request prayer for them, don't you? Isn't it strange that he didn't? Sounds so unchristian, doesn't it? I don't think we would do that, would we? Even with the grossest of error, we might say, but brethren, pray for these men. But Paul didn't say, pray for these people. And he didn't say, don't offend them. Don't immediately confront them. You know, if we could just let this thing sort of work its way out of our churches, if we could just, you know, it's not that serious. We all know what we believe, what we don't believe. And after all, now let me tell you something. Everything that I've ever heard proposed, ever since I've been in the ministry, has always been a change that would affect things for good. And I rather suspect that these Judaizers peddled this idea of, look, you can be a Christian and you don't have to give up your Judaism, and that would have appealed to the Jews, and they could have kept a sizable number of people in their congregations. It wasn't a way to create less. It was a way to create more. And every program, everything that I've ever heard anybody propose, it was always so we can be more. Think about that. Every device, every human invention that's brought into the church is always brought into the church with the idea that it'll make us bigger, that it'll make us better. I've never heard anybody stand up in business meetings and say, I move that we start so-and-so because all the other churches that have done this, they've never grown. It doesn't help them at all. And I rather suspect the churches at Galatia were embracing this because it was a policy that increased their ability to keep the Jewish element of believers faithful to the congregation. And Paul said, no, it's not that. It's a perversion. And you've changed it. Not slightly, but you've changed it. Listen, they were still preaching the death of Christ. They were still preaching the burial of Christ. They were still preaching the resurrection of Christ. They were still believing in and teaching these three things that we call constitute the principles of the gospel, but they were adding something to it. And evidently what they were adding to it was cementing many of the people who may have wandered away from it. And they were saying, okay, if that's the way it is, we'll stay with you. We'll not go back to Judaism and renounce our Christian beliefs. We will simply practice both. It was a compromise. Paul said, let him be accursed. Anathema. Dedicated for judgment. Placed under the curse. Damned. In fact, some of the translations that I read said, let him be damned. He said, well, we know better now that you know, this is a bad attitude. Paul was wrong when he said such a thing. It's too it's just too judgmental, it's too harsh. But then, just to make sure that no one thought Paul had gone off the deep end, lost his mind, and written a statement that he would later regret, Paul wrote the statement again. Notice in verse 9, as we said before, that is what I have just written to you, so say I again. If any man preach any other gospel unto you than that which you have received, that is, that you took from me, that you received from me, what? Let him be accursed. Same word. Anathema. Let him be placed under a judgment of condemnation. And this placing of condemnation and judgment was so absolute that there was not a thing that a person could do to redeem it. For instance, if you had some article that had been used for some crime or some rebellion, that article, it might be a number of animals that had been used to do something evil, as like horses used in a raid against a bank, or anything that had been used to do dishonor and perhaps to slay people. You take these articles and you would pronounce them anathema, that is, under judgment. Whenever you pronounce that article, such as a sword or a house or a castle or anything, under judgment or anathematize it, that meant that no one could buy it, no one could use it, no one could redeem it. That curse had to be carried out. When a person was anathematized, it meant that that sentence against them had to be carried out. Now what Paul is saying, let these people be anathema. Let them be under judgment for which there is no redemption, for which no price can be paid. Paul repeated his statement for two reasons, for clarity and for emphasis. Just to make sure that no one misunderstood what he said it again, because it's so shocking, it's so unlike Paul, it seems to be so unlike Christ. But you know, we get the idea that people who preach a false gospel are nice people, and we ought to give them our respect, and that we ought to even emulate them. I've had people say we ought to be like the Jehovah's Witnesses. Now we could learn a lot from these people, that people, this kind of stuff, that kind of stuff. And as though, well, you've got to admire these people. Paul did not admire these people for anything they did. And the idea that in religion, that if you're wrong, it really doesn't make any difference, because we're all on that broad road of wherever it is we're all going, that really doesn't make any difference what you believe, just as long as you're sincere in what you believe. Now, Paul said, for do I now persuade men or God? And that seems a little bit disconnected from what Paul has just said about letting people who preach another gospel be placed under judgment or condemnation. There were people who said that Paul preached in order to gain the favor of men. For instance, he's preaching to the Gentiles and he's telling them they don't have to become Jews in order to be saved. So Paul is currying the favor of man in order to get them to accept what he preaches. Paul preaches to please people. Paul said, now, after I've made that statement twice, what do you think? What do you think now, after I've made that statement? Do you think now that I'm trying to gain a following from as many people as I possibly can? What do you think now? Am I trying to please men, or am I trying to please God? What do you think my motives are now after I've written that? Do I now persuade, try to win the favor, or win over to my side? Do you think I've said what I've said in order to get men on my side or God on my side? Paul knows that what he has said will cause a great deal of anger to be directed toward him. And Paul realizes that these people are going to say, if they answer truthfully, Paul, what you've said and the statement that you've just written, no one can accuse you of writing those to gain the favor of men. It must have been written to please God and not to please men. Paul said, or do I seek to please men? What is my purpose? What am I striving to do? To please men or to please God? Paul said, if I please men and put my stamp of approval on what you people are doing, if I had not given this stern, strong condemnation of a perverted gospel, then I would not be a servant of Christ. If I still sought men's favor, I should be no servant of Christ. The message that Paul preached did not please the Jews. Those who were saved still loved the law and wanted Paul to say, yes, I agree, you can be a Christian, but you don't have to forsake the law. And Paul said, I'm not going to say that because it's not the truth. We really don't understand the full impact of the word servant. We get the idea that this is somebody that pretty well does what somebody else wants them to. But the word that's translated servant means a bond slave. And bond slaves didn't ask questions. They obeyed. They didn't try to decide whether it was the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do. They obeyed. And today we have that sort of mentality of arguing with God and questioning God. People will know, well, I know the Bible says, but, you know, I wonder if God, and people just sort of pass by the idea that I don't have a right to think, I don't have a right to judge, I don't have a right to set aside what God says and plug my own philosophy into anything. I ought to do it whether I want to or not. I ought to do it whether it makes any sense or not. I ought to do it whether I'm happy doing it or not. And I think this is one of our real serious problems. People say, but I don't want to do that. And they're so undisciplined that they don't do what they don't want to do. It's meology again, the age in which we live. I said, well, if you don't want to go to church, why, you ought not to go to church. I don't believe that. I think if you don't want to go to church, you ought to go anyway. You say, well, if you don't want to give, you ought not to give. Brother, if you don't want to give, you ought to give anyway. Because you are a servant. You are a bond slave. It's not left up to you to decide what you want to do. The only decisions that you and I can make are decisions to be obedient or disobedient. Paul said, if I put my stamp of approval on this stuff that I know is not true, I wouldn't be obedient to Christ. And it's not up to me to decide what message to preach. God's already given me that. It's just me and my decision to decide whether I'll either obey or disobey. He said, preacher, I don't get anything out of church. You think I ought to keep coming? Absolutely. I really do. He said, well, I don't put anything into it. I don't get anything out of it. What do you think I ought to do? I think you ought to obey Christ, whether you like it or don't like it, whether it feels good or whether it feels bad. That's what obedience is, isn't it?
Not predicated upon your feelings, not predicated upon your whimsies, not predicated upon who you are and what you think you ought to be doing or not be doing. It's not a matter of whether, you know, the idea of getting up and decide on whether to come to church or not, that's not a matter of your decision. Now, I'm not talking about being sick and all this other stuff. Don't misunderstand me. Now, Paul said, "But I certify you, brethren, that the gospel which was preached of me is not after man." The word certify is not a word that means to guarantee. I guarantee it. No, no. The word certify means to point out and to make known and to explain. Paul said, "Let me explain. Let me explain to you, my brothers, about the gospel that I preached unto you when I came to you. Let me explain it. Let me show you how all of this happened, where I got the gospel I preached to you. The source of my message is this: for I neither received it of man." First thing Paul says, no man gave me the gospel that I preach. This truth that I preach is not man-made. He makes two statements about the gospel in verse 12. For I neither received it of man, neither was I taught it by man. Paul didn't get it from a man. That is, its source was not a man. And the person who instructed Paul in the gospel was not a man. No man taught it to Paul. The point Paul wants to make is that the apostles, plural, did not teach him the truths of the gospel. Paul said, you know how I learned what I know about the facts of the gospel? I received it by the revelation of Jesus Christ. The revelation here is the unveiling. The entire system of the message, the entire system of God's revelation, of the truths of God, are a matter of God showing it to men and not a matter of men figuring it out for themselves. And Paul said, the man who unveiled the truths that I preach to you is Jesus Christ. The person that revealed it to me is Jesus Christ. No man taught it. No man thought it up. And I didn't receive it at the hand of any man. And therefore, it's of God. I rather suspect people were saying, you know, Paul, he's not really an apostle. And what he taught us, the other apostles could come and change because they were with Christ. Paul is saying, I didn't get my message from Peter. I didn't get my message from the other apostles or John or anybody else. I got it from Jesus Christ. And what I taught you is the truth, and you don't have a right to change it, to water it down, or to compromise it. And most of all, you ought not to receive any man who comes in and troubles you by giving an addenda to the gospel. You know, there's always that addenda to the gospel. There's always that little star, that little asterisk here with this little explanation down here. But my friend, there are no addendas to the gospel of the Son of God. There are no asterisks with further explanation at the end of the chapter. There are no book references other than the Word of God to the gospel of Jesus Christ. Now you ask, Brother Penn, do you think you preach this same truth that Paul preached? Yes, I do. You say, well, aren't you going to apologize for taking that kind of arrogant, egotistical attitude? No, I'm not. Jesus said, you shall know the truth. That is, it is possible for you to know the truth, and you people are going to learn the truth. We can know the truth. And the truth is this, that men are saved by the grace of God upon receiving the gospel of Jesus Christ, plus nothing, minus nothing. Baptism doesn't help you to be saved, and the lack of it doesn't help you to be lost. Church membership is not essential to salvation. It is not going to help you nor hinder you. Let me tell you something. If all your hope is that you're a member of a Baptist church, you might as well be a member of a Catholic church. I'm going to say that again. If your hope of going to heaven is pinned on the one thing that you've got, and that is, I'm the member of a Baptist church. If that's all you've got, you don't have any more than the Catholic has. Because Baptist church membership doesn't save. And Catholic church membership doesn't save. Neither one of them are effective remedies for the sins that all of us have and bear. The only remedy is Jesus Christ. And if you don't have Christ before you join the church, then that membership in the church is without effect. You might as well join a political party or the Lions Club. Because you go to hell from a Baptist church just as quickly as you will from any other church that preaches a false plan of salvation. Your eternal salvation depends upon Christ. And so does mine. And so does everyone else's. And I do believe that I'm preaching the truth to you this morning. I believe that I'm telling you what God wants you to hear. And you say, well, are you doing this to please men? Are you doing it to please God? I'm not doing it to please you. Whatever you may think, I'm not doing it to please you. You say, well, if it didn't please us, what would you do? I'd preach it anyway. Because I don't have a choice. I am Christ's servant. I don't decide what's true and what's false. I decide whether I'll be obedient to the truth or not. And so do you. Have you received Christ? He said, well, I've come close. I'm sorry. It doesn't count. Have you received Christ? He says, well, I'm trying to get all this worked out. I'm sorry, it doesn't count. What counts is that in our hearts and in our souls, we commit who we are and our hope of being a child of God into the hands of Christ in total 100% commitment to Him. A lot of things to do afterward, but these things we do afterward have nothing to do with our salvation.